This is Lecture 12 from Rudolf Steiner's lecture cycle, The Foundations of Human Experience. This is the synopsis. The inner connections between the physical body and the environment. The physical structure of the human being. The continual overcoming by the torso and limbs of animalistic forms emanating from the head. Thoughts as their supersensible correlation. The relationship of the torso to the plant kingdom, the opposing processes of human breathing and plant assimilation, the development of plant-like tendencies in human beings as a cause of illness, the plant kingdom as a picture of all illnesses, human nutrition as the central portion of the combustion processes occurring in plants, breathing as an anti-plant process, the relationship of breathing and nutrition to the physical body and the soul, the future task of medicine and health care, modern medicine's search for bacteria, the relationship of the limbs to the mineral kingdom, the continual dissolving of minerals by the limbs, illnesses such as diabetes or gout as a beginning of the crystallization process in the body. The I, capital, lives in forces. The task of the human physical body, dissolving what is mineral-like, reversing what is plant-like, spiritualizing what is animal-like. The end of the synopsis. Lecture 12, given in Stuttgart, September 3, 1919. When we consider the human body, we must bring it into relationship with our physically sensible surroundings, because it exists in a continuous interaction with them, and they support it. When we gaze at our physical surroundings, we perceive minerals, plants, and animals. Our physical body is related to these minerals, plants, and animals. Superficial observation, however, does not immediately reveal the type of relationship. We must delve more deeply into the essence of the natural kingdoms if we want to understand the interaction between human beings and their physical surroundings. We first perceive the skeleton and muscles of the human physical body. If we penetrate further, we then perceive the circulatory system and the organs associated with it. We perceive breathing and the digestive processes. We can see how the organs, as natural science calls them, develop out of various vessel forms. We perceive the brain, the nerves, the sense organs. Our task is to integrate these various human organs and processes into the world where the human being exists. Let us begin with what at first seems most complete. We have already seen how it is in reality. That is, let us begin with the human brain and nervous system and its interconnections with the sense organs. Here we have those human functions and structures that have developed over the longest period so that they have gone beyond the animal form. The human central nervous system has in a sense gone through and beyond that of the animal to a truly human system most clearly expressed as the head. Yesterday we spoke of the head's effect on individual human development, that is, the extent to which the formation of the human body arises out of forces emanating from the head. We also saw that the effects of the head, in a sense, conclude with the change of teeth around 7 years of age. We need to be clear about what actually occurs in the interaction of the human head with the chest and limb organs. We need to answer the question, what does the head actually do in its work with the torso and limbs? It continuously forms. In the first 7 years, our life consists of a formative impulse emanating from the head and entering the physical body. After that time, the head continues to assist by preserving the form and filling it with soul and spirit. The head is connected with human formation, but does the head create our human form? No, it does not. You must get used to the idea that the head always secretly wants to make something of you other than what you are. There are moments when the head wants to form you so that you look like a wolf. There are moments when the head wants to form you so that you look like a lamb, then to make you look like a worm, and to change you from a worm to a dragon. All of the forms your head would like to make of you, you can find illustrated in the various animal forms of nature. If you were to look at the animal kingdom, you could say to yourself, "There I am, only my torso and limbs continually do me the favor of reforming me from a wolf back to a human being each time my head attempts to make a wolf out of me." You continually overcome what is animalistic. You overcome it such that it does not ever come into existence. Instead, you metamorphose and transform it. Through the head, human beings are related to the animal kingdom, but in such a way that in their physical activities they continually go beyond it. What actually remains in you? You can look at someone, you can imagine someone, and you can create an interesting observation by saying, "There is a human being. On top, there is a head, but it moves like a wolf. However, it is not a wolf. The wolf is dissolved by the torso and the limbs. It moves like a lamb, but is dissolved by the torso and limbs." Animal forms are always active supersensibly in the human being and are then dissolved. What would happen if there were a supersensible photographer who could capture this process? If we could capture this whole process on photographic plates or on continually changing photographic plates, what would they show? What would we see in these photographs? We would see human thoughts. Human thoughts are the supersensible equivalent of what is not expressed sense perceptibly. The continual metamorphosis of animalistic tendencies streaming downward from the head is not expressed sense perceptibly, but those tendencies act supersensibly upon the human being as the thought process. That really exists as a supersensible process. Your head is not just a lazy bones sitting on your shoulders. It is actually the thing that would like to keep you an animal. It gives you the forms of the whole animal kingdom and continually wants to create the animal kingdom. However, due to your torso and limbs, you do not allow yourself to become a whole animal kingdom while you are alive. Instead, you transform this animal kingdom in your thoughts. That is how we stand in relationship to the animal kingdom. We allow the animal kingdom to arise in us supersensibly, but do not allow it to come to sense-perceptible reality. Instead, we hold it in the supersensible. The torso and limbs do not allow the arising animals into their realms. If the head tends too strongly to create something from those animalistic forms, the remainder of the organism resists it, and the head must resort to migraines and similar conditions to destroy them. The torso also has a relationship to the environment. However, it is a relationship not to the animal realm, but to the entire plant world. A secret connection exists between the human torso, that is the chest, and the plant world. In the torso, it occurs primarily in the circulation, breathing, and digestion. All of these processes interact with the natural physical activity of the plant world, but within a very unusual relationship. Let us first look at breathing. What does a person do while breathing? You know that a person takes in oxygen and combines it metabolically with carbon, thereby producing carbon dioxide. Carbon enters the body through metabolized food. The carbon bonds with oxygen, thus forming carbon dioxide. This would be a fine opportunity for people, once they have created carbon dioxide, to retain it rather than to expel it. What would happen if they could separate the carbon from the oxygen? If, after human beings inhaled oxygen and bonded it with carbon to form carbon dioxide, they were then able to release the oxygen but retain and use the carbon, what would then occur? The plant world. A variety of plants would suddenly grow in people. Plants could grow. When you look at a plant, what does it do? Plants do not rhythmically inhale oxygen as people do. They assimilate carbon dioxide. By day, plants are eager for carbon dioxide and give off oxygen. It would be dreadful if plants did not do that, since we and animals would then have no oxygen. However, plants retain the carbon and form starch and sugars out of it. They build their entire organism from it. The world of plants exists because plants are formed of carbon, separated from the assimilated carbon dioxide. If you look at the plant world, you will see that plants are metamorphosed carbon, separated in the assimilation process that corresponds to human breathing. In a way, plants breathe, but differently from the way people breathe. Only superficial observation could assert that plants breathe. They do breathe a little in the night, but to say this is breathing would be the same as if you were to say, here is a razor blade, I want to cut meat with it. The breathing process in plants is different from that of people and animals, in the same way that a razor blade is different from a steak knife. The human breathing process corresponds to the reverse process in plants, namely assimilation. Now you can understand how all kinds of plants could grow in you if the process that forms carbon dioxide were to continue and oxygen were again expelled. If carbon dioxide were transformed into carbon as is done in nature, you have the materials in you, then you could internally achieve the sudden growth of the entire plant world. You would disappear and be replaced by the plant world. The capacity to continually create a world of plants exists in human beings, but they do not allow it to come to completion. The torso has a strong tendency to create the plant world. However, the head and limbs do not allow that to occur. They resist it. Human beings exhale carbon dioxide and inhibit the growth of the plant kingdom in themselves. Instead, they allow the plant kingdom to arise from carbon dioxide in the world outside. The curious interrelationship of the torso and its sense-perceptible surroundings is that the plant world exists outside people, and that in order not to become a plant, people must not allow the vegetative process to arise within them. When it occurs, they must immediately expel it. We can therefore say that human beings are capable of creating the inverse of the plant kingdom in the torso. If you imagine the plant kingdom or as positive, then people create the negative of it. In a sense, they create the reverse of the plant kingdom. What occurs when the plant kingdom begins to misbehave in people, and the head and limbs do not have sufficient strength to stop it in its tracks? Then people become ill. In principle, internal illnesses that arise in the torso occur because people are too weak to immediately hinder vegetative growth. If at the moment when something within us tends toward the plant kingdom, we are not able to expel it immediately and let it create its own kingdom outside us, we become ill. We must seek the nature of illness in the realization that plants begin to grow in people. Of course, people do not become plants because the interior of a human being is not a pleasant surrounding for a lily. However, a tendency for the plant kingdom to arise can occur due to a weakness of the other systems, and then people become ill. If we look at the entire plant world, we must admit that in a certain sense, the plant world presents us with pictures of all our illnesses. It is a curious aspect of the human connection to nature that not only can we see pictures of pre-adolescent human development in plants, as we have discussed on other occasions, but in so far as plants bear fruit, we can also see pictures of illness. This is something that people may not like to hear because, of course, they love the aesthetics of the plant world. Insofar as the plant world unfolds its nature outside human beings, people are correct in their aesthetic viewpoint. However, when the plant world wants to unfold its nature inside human beings, that is, when human beings want to become plant-like, then what is active in the colorful world of plants outside then becomes the cause of illness inside them. Medicine will become a science when it can bring each illness into correspondence with a plant. It is simply a fact that as people exhale carbon dioxide for the sake of their existence, in reality they exhale the plant world wanting to develop in them. You need not be amazed that when plants extend beyond their normal existence and develop poisons, these poisons also have a connection with human health and disease. However, there is also a connection with normal digestion. Digestion, like breathing, also occurs in the torso and must be considered in a similar way. In digestion, people ingest their surroundings, but do not allow them to remain as they are. They transform them. People transform their surroundings with the help of oxygen brought in through breathing. They join what they eat with oxygen after they transform the food. This process appears to be a process of combustion, making people look as if they continuously burned inside. Scientists often say that a burning, oxidizing process is active in people. However, that is not true. What occurs in people is not a real oxidation process. It is an oxidation process, pay attention to this, that is missing the beginning and end. It is only the middle stage of combustion, and the beginning and end are missing. The beginning and end of the oxidation process must never occur in the human body, only the middle. If the first stage of oxidation took place in the human organism, as it does in the formation of fruit, it would be destructive, as when people eat unripe fruit. People cannot endure the beginning of the combustion process. It cannot exist in them and makes them ill. When people can eat a large amount of unripe fruit, as strong country people can, it is because they have such an extremely strong relationship to the surrounding nature that they can digest unripe apples and pears in the same way they can digest fruit cooked to maturity by the sun. Generally, people can endure only the middle part of the process, only the middle oxidizing process of digestion. People are also not able to participate in the concluding stages of the process, which is like what occurs when ripe fruit begins to rot. They cannot take part in the end of the process and must therefore excrete the nutritional matter. In fact, natural processes are not completed in people as they are in the environment. Only the middle portions are completed in people. They cannot complete the beginning and the ending. Now we see something very unusual. Consider breathing. It is the opposite of everything that occurs in the plant world. In a sense, it is, quote, anti-plant kingdom, unquote. Human breathing is anti-plant kingdom. Inside human beings, breathing joins with digestion, the middle portion of an external process. As you can see, two different things live in our physical torso, namely the anti-plant process of breathing that always acts with the middle portion of the other, the external natural processes. These interact. Here is the connection between body and soul. It is the mysterious connection between body and soul. When the human breathing process connects with the middle part of the remaining natural processes, the soul, that is the anti-plant process, connects with the humanly physical, that is always the middle portion of natural processes. Science will have to think long and hard about the inner connections between body and soul if it does not seek them in the mysterious connection between the ensouled breath and the bodily existence of the middle part of natural processes. These natural processes neither rise nor fall in human beings. They begin outside people and can end only after they are excreted. People are physically connected only with the middle events of the natural processes, and these processes are ensouled by breathing. Here arises the fine web of processes that the medicine and healthcare of the future must study. In the future, healthcare will need to ask how the various levels of heat interact in the cosmos. What is the effect of heat transferred from a cooler location to a warmer one, and vice versa? How does an external heat process affect the human organism when a human being encounters it? An interplay of air and water in the processes of external vegetation has been identified, but its effects on people will need to be studied. Modern medicine has barely begun to ask such questions. It places much greater value upon the discovery of the bacteria that cause a disease or illness. It is satisfied when it knows this. However, it is much more important that we know how human beings can sometimes internally develop a tiny amount of the vegetative process so that bacteria sense that as a pleasant place to stay. What is important is that we maintain our bodies so that they do not present a hospitable place for any kind of vegetative growth. If we do that, then these fine bacterial friends will no longer be able to create such chaos in us. In considering the relationship of the physical human being to the outer world, we still have the question concerning the relationship of the skeleton and muscles to human vital processes. Here we come to something that you absolutely must understand if you are to understand the human being, but that remains almost totally unconsidered by modern science. Consider what occurs when you bend your arm. Through contracting your muscles, you cause the lower arm to bend, which is a very mechanical process. Imagine that you held the position shown in this first sketch. It's just a straight arm. You could attach a string here and roll it up, and he's showing just kind of a rolling the front part of the arm up. Then the lower arm would make this movement. This is a mechanical movement. You also perform such mechanical movements when you bend your knees and walk. In walking, all the machinery of your body moves and forces act continuously, primarily forces of leverage, but forces nevertheless. Now suppose it were possible to photograph only the forces a person employs walking, but not the person. That is, we could photograph the forces used to lift first one leg and then the other and so forth. We could photograph only the forces, and there would be nothing in the picture of the person. If you develop these photographs of forces, you would see only shadows, or in the case of walking, a band of shadows. It would be an error to believe that you live with your capital I in the muscles and flesh. Even when you are awake, you do not live with your capital I in the muscles and flesh. You live with your I mainly in these shadows that you photographed, that is, in the forces that cause the movement of your body. For example, as odd as it may sound, when you sit down and press your back into the chair, you live with your I in the force that develops in that pressure. When you stand, you live in the force that your feet exert upon the earth. You are always living in forces. It is untrue that our I lives in our visible bodies. Our I lives in forces. We only drag our physical bodies around with us during our physical earthly life. When we are wakeful, we live only in a force body. But what does this force body actually do? It undertakes an unusual task. When you eat, you ingest all kinds of mineral matter. Even though you may not salt your soup strongly, you ingest mineral matter. Salt is already in the food. Furthermore, you have a need to ingest minerals. What do you do with these minerals? Your head is unable to do much with minerals, and the same is true of your torso. But your limbs inhibit minerals from assuming their natural crystal forms within you. If you did not develop the forces in your limbs, you would become a salt block when you ate salt. Your limbs, your skeleton, and muscles always tend to work against the mineral-forming capacity of the earth. That means they tend to dissolve minerals. The human forces that dissolve minerals come from the limbs. If an illness goes beyond the simple vegetative state, that is, if the body not only tends to allow the plant world to begin to grow, but also allows the crystallization process to begin, then an extremely destructive form of illness exists. For example, diabetes. Then the human body is no longer able to dissolve the minerals it takes in from the world, as the forces from the limbs should dissolve them. When we are unable to overcome those illnesses arising from disease causing mineralization in the body, it is often because we are unable to utilize fully the remedies against these illnesses that we all must take from the network of the sense organs, or the brain, or the nerves. In some form or another, we must use the pseudo-matter, I call it pseudo-matter for particular reasons, that is, in the sense organs, in the brain, and in the nerves, that decomposing matter to gain control over such illnesses as gout, diabetes, and so forth. People can first become healthy in this area when we understand the relationship of human beings to nature from the standpoint I have discussed today. We can only understand the human body by first understanding its processes, and understanding that people must dissolve what is mineral in themselves, must invert what is plant in themselves, and must raise themselves above, that is, spiritualize what is animal. Everything teachers should know about physical development is based upon such anthropological and anthroposophical considerations as those I have discussed with you here. Tomorrow, we want to discuss what we can build on this pedagogically. The end of Lecture 12.